February the 24th, which has been postponed from last week, the 18th. So we welcome you all here. Thank you for the flexibility. I think we were all kind of anticipating the snow we got. Commissioner, thank you for being here. First item is the public forum. We have anyone who wishes to address the commission on any item that's not on the agenda. With that, we'll move into our first action item would be the minutes from our January 21st meeting that have been sent out in the packet. And if there are any changes, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the minutes as from the meeting of 1-21-25 as submitted.
Second.
Motion. Kathy's second. Page. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to approve the minutes from our January 21st meeting. Okay, the first item we'll go to will be in reports. Mr. Jarrett, financial reports.
Good afternoon. Yes, sir. This will be our report for my day, January. Starting with billed revenue and consumption. Billed revenue for water in total was up 19% year over year, compared to January of 2024. If you just look at the billed revenue related to consumption, though, it's up 8% year over year, and that compares to actual consumption, which is up 5%. On the sewer side, our billed revenue year over year in total is up 29%. Just looking at that billed revenue associated with consumption, it's up 6%. Actual consumption up 4%. So looking at those numbers there, you might wonder, hey, what's with billed revenue? Well, we'll get to that when we get to access and impact fees. We had a strong month this month that explains basically that difference there, that significant increase from January of 2024. In terms of our actuals versus budget, our benchmark for January was 7 months of the way through the fiscal year, so that's 58% that we use as our benchmark. In the water department, revenues and expenses are both trending over that, with revenues at 66% and expenses at 60%. Our capital outlay to date is 30% of our budgeted total. And for sewer, revenues are at 60%, so it's above our benchmark. Expenses at 56%, a little below. And our capital to date, just 18% on the sewer side. For our year-to-date income, water year-to-date income is 5% higher than last year, and sewer is 4% higher than last year, excluding ARPA grant revenues. We'll look at these in a little bit greater detail here. For water, our net income was $361,000 for the month of January. Totals up to just over $4 million, and that's about $200,000 better than this same time last year, or 5%. And on the sewer side, we did $648,000 of net income in January. On this table, I do have a breakout for the one-time ARPA grant revenues. We did not receive any additional revenues in January, so that $981,000 number there is unchanged, but it all totals up to $5.3 million. And if you don't include the ARPA grant revenues, which kind of skews the numbers a little bit, we're up about 3.7% over where we were this time last year in the sewer department. So looking pretty good there in terms of net income. Access and impact fees, we collected $574,100 this month. I believe actually a part of that was probably related to misbilling from the month prior when we collected half of the access fees that we probably should have collected for a certain development. So we went back and got the rest of what we were owed, which is part of what you see here in January. Year-to-date actuals are 67% of the 24 total and 96% of the current year budget. So it totals up to about just over $2 million so far this year. And again, that's with 5 months to go, right? So looking good in terms of access and impact fees. Other financial reporting items were at $54.5 million of total unrestricted and restricted funds. That's compared to $49 million in the same period last year. And our lost water 12-month rolling average is 6%. One little bonus bit of trivia that I've included in the report this month is receipts by payment method. And so this is just sort of a kind of a big picture view of online payments versus on-site payments. So on-site payments includes payments taken in person, as well as those received by mail. And online includes all ACH, bank draft, website, and automated phone payments. And the chart here is like a five-year snapshot. So we've got data from 2009, 2014, 2019, 2024. And it's just kind of interesting to see how it flips, right? In 2009, 27% of our payments were made online. And that compares to 28% in 2024 were made on site. So it's basically just flipped over this 5, 10, 15, 20 year, 15 year time frame. You would expect, and you can kind of start to see it already, how it's leveled off a bit. Obviously, there's going to be a line there that it's probably not going to cross. We're never going to get to 100% online payments, for example. But obviously, the more payments you can put online, the less work it is on our CSRs working out in the front, at the window, at the drive-through. And so it's nice to see this. Just a little bit of interesting trivia there in terms of how people have chosen to pay in different ways over the years. That concludes my financial report for January, but while I'm giving you financial reports, I'll go ahead and move into our administration of the investment policy. We do this once a year. We just gave the presentation to the Investment and Depository Committee, and I'll do the same for you. This is a requirement of our investment policy to keep you posted on how we're doing. We give a quarterly report to the superintendent, and then the December 31st numbers we come and present to you guys. So we'll start with just kind of a summary of where the cash is, and you can see that on this page here. I will note that I'm giving you an updated version of what's in your packet. There was a minor error on this page for the document that was uploaded to the agenda. I corrected that for the purpose of this presentation. So we'll get into the breakout of how these funds are spread across these different places later on in the report. But this is a nice just summary view to show you the total funds in relation to the minimum reserves calculated December 31st, 2023. So this water, for example, is at the minimum reserves were $14,449,000. And so that was the minimum reserve that we used for calendar year 2024. And our total funds relative to that were $28.8 million, which gave us almost $14.4 million of reserves in excess of our required minimum as of December 31st. And then similarly for sewer, we're at $25.3 million with a required minimum reserve of $14,856,000, leaving us with almost $10.5 million of reserves over and above the required minimum. Sorry, Travis, you've heard this already.
No, you're doing it. It's good.
We've got funds held at Arvest Bank. That's our main bank for doing business. Our O&M accounts are there. We've got about $16 million at this point in time in Arvest. First National Bank, we've got about $2.5 million there. Those are our depreciation accounts, meter deposits. Any payments that we take online, like I was talking about, those will go into an account here at First National before they get transferred over to Arvest. Between these two banks, it's almost $19 million here. This is a schedule of our CDERS. We've got investments in water on the top, a total of $14.7 million. Investments in sewer on the bottom, a total of $16.1 million. You can see there the institutions these are placed with, a variety of different banks there. The CD type for almost all of them is O&M, operating and maintenance accounts, but we do have one held at Arvest for the majority of our meter deposits funds are held in a CD there at Arvest. Also interesting to note here, if you look at the purchase date, that's how these are sorted by purchase date. And you can see how the interest rate was stronger, was a little bit higher in the first part of the year, and then getting into September, October, November, December, when we made those investments, it started to drop a little bit. In total, though, it's almost $31 million invested in these CDs. Simmons is where we keep our excess and impact fees. They're here. When we collect them, they go to Simmons, but then as we make qualified disbursements for additions and improvements to our system, we can reimburse our O&M accounts held at Arvest. And so you guys authorized to do that, also authorized us to do that with the adoption of the annual budget. The same is true for the depreciation funds. Those aren't for additions and improvements, though. Those are for repairs and replacements to the existing infrastructure. But in both cases, you give us the okay for that during the annual budget process. So funds accrue to these accounts, and then periodically we reimburse ourselves. Debt service accounts, the three at Regions you're familiar with. We added one at Arvest this year to hold our the funds that we're drawing down from our 2024 bond, the ANRC. You see $692 there. We're actually not paying any principal and interest on this until November of 2026, but as we reimburse ourselves, the funds show up in this account, and then we pretty well immediately transfer it to sewer O&M at Arvest. But while it's there, it earns a little bit of interest, and that's the money that you see here. This is a schedule of our restricted and unrestricted assets. This type of schedule, I don't review in my monthly presentation, but it's always in the packet, so you can always see this each month. For water, we've got unrestricted assets of $24.9 million. And then you can also see the different classes of restricted assets, meter deposits. This says debt reserve, but it's really just the funds that we're putting to our Regions account each month in anticipation of the semi-annual principal and interest payments that we're making. So we keep putting money in each month, and then every 6 months, money goes out to pay the P&I. Access and impact fees, depreciation. For water, it's a total of $3.9 million of restricted funds, 28.8 total. For sewer, we've got unrestricted funds of about $22 million down here at the bottom, and restricted funds of 3.4, totals to about $25.3 million for sewer. And it gets you to our combined number of 54.1, almost 54.2 million restricted and unrestricted funds between water and sewer combined. That's where the money is. I'll just conclude the report with a short summary of our investment income in 2024. Again, it's for the calendar year, and this report gives you the type of account, where it's held, the interest rate, and the interest income for 2024, and then in gray over on the right-hand side, I've given you, for comparison's sake, the interest rate and the interest income for calendar year 2023, just so we can kind of note the changes here and there. In general, as I go through it briefly, you'll see that interest rates have decreased a little bit. My caveat on that is just that that's a point in time interest rate on these things as of December 31st. So when you see, I'll just scroll down right quick to CDs down here. When you see the interest rate last year of 5.13 and 4.90, that's as of December 31st. And I can tell you that the first part of 2023, the interest rates were not that high. But as we went through the year, they got higher, right? Mm-hmm. Similarly, for 2024, interest rates have been coming down a little bit. So this is an average of all of our different investments. But the ones that were invested in the first part of 2024, they were invested at a higher rate. And the ones that have been most recently invested have been a little bit lower. That's just a note on the interest rates that you see here. The other thing that I'll point out is how much is invested, how much cash do we have? And across these different accounts, this is just a rough way of doing it, but you can look at our cash at a point in time, at December 31st of 22 and 23 and 24. And from those data points, you can pull an average of what we had available to invest in 2023 and what we had available to invest in 2024. And you can see it's about $4 million more this past year than we had in 2023. So just to go through these quickly, Arvest, we're getting about 2.85% on our accounts there. First National Bank, we get 1% on our meter deposit and depreciation accounts. We don't get anything in our credit card account, but that's the one that's receiving our online payments, and those get transferred over to the Arvest O&M account, so they're not there for any longer than a month. And then our trust accounts held at Simmons, these are all invested in U.S. Treasuries. They're earning us 4.36%. Certificates of deposit, we're at 4.72% on average across the different CDs and water, 4.8% for sewer. Our bond accounts at Regions, we're earning 4.47%. That's down a little bit from the 4.93 you see last year. That new account at Arvest for the 2024 bond I mentioned earlier, it's earning 1.75. It all totals up to just over $2.2 million of interest income for calendar year 2024, which is an increase compared to the 1.7 and change that we earned in 2023. It was kind of a lot in a short amount of time. Are there any questions about that? Between this and the items that we'll get to under new business, this will satisfy the obligations of our investment policy in terms of the reporting and the requirements of the commission each year.
So basically, we've reviewed the January numbers, and probably for the purpose is just make a note that that concludes our annual review of the 12/31/24 investments. So the record reflects that we'll be required to have access to just a note that you have prepared the annual review.
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Travis, we'll come back. I know we've got two things. So we'll defer. The next item on the agenda is engineering reports.
Good afternoon.
Howdy.
I'm here for December. I'm sorry. This is the new, actually, January.
Elected to change that label. This will be for January 2024. Again, 140 plan reviews, pretty much in the average there. You know, this blue is all commercial, followed by land disturbance, large scale development. We've got signed permits over here. So most of this quarter of the circle here is mostly site development, public improvement plans.
You're good.
Appreciate it.
You're okay. You're good.
And so that's where the vast majority of our time is spent right there in that quarter, looking at those civil plans. Review trends over a 12-month period. Again, we're kind of right there in that average, I believe back in August that's when we started looking at. That sign permits, that's why those numbers kind of jump up right there.
But those are not taken, I think you've indicated previously that they don't take a lot of time.
I know when you look at that individual report, there's a lot of them on there.
There's quite a few. Yeah.
It's like a lot. I just wondered if it takes a lot of time or if it's.
Some of them do, you know. We look at some of these larger. Subdivisions and apartment complexes, those can take several hours up to a day or more to review some of those plans. Sign permit, it might take them 5 minutes to look at and say, yeah, it's not an easement, it's not affecting us, we don't have an issue with it. So it really runs the gamut. And most of those commercial plan review permits, we're looking for two things. We're looking for is it going to produce grease or any kind of thing that's going to go down the sewer and be detrimental to our collection system or the plant? And then on the water side, we're looking for backflow protection on commercial and industrial. And so other than that, the rest of it's just plumbing, which we don't really. That's all risk reductions review. For the project status here, I know we keep saying in Jared's report that we're running behind schedule and under budget compared to the budgeted amounts, and I feel that I was optimistic when we made this year's budget. There are several projects in design here that are running behind. But at this point, I had anticipated this being under construction with three projects, mainly the sanitary sewer improvements from Chateau to 24th, and then the Blossom Way sewer from Polly Whitaker to Dixieland, and also the Highway 12 East waterline replacement, and some of the downtown work. And these have been delayed for various reasons. Easements, I know in the case of Chateau, you know, we redesigned that project because of some tornado damage and some buildings that were destroyed. These are going to happen, and they're going to happen pretty quick as we try to resolve some of these issues. But we hit a few roadblocks in there. I did add a couple of projects to the list under pre-design and concept. We have asked Friesen Nichols to give us a proposal to update the sewer model. And as you recall, the master plan was completed in 2023 with a complete model, but that was before all the new development codes were anticipated. So with the potential to have higher densities, and before we got off the ground under construction with some of these large sewer capacity projects, we thought it'd be smart to run that through the model one more time to make sure that we were making the right decision before we spent tens of millions of dollars on the collection system.
Good work.
Get another check on that. And so, and also we spoke with Track Design Group to look at doing some more smoke testing for 2025. We had some concerns in some of those areas where we have some shallower sewer and some tornadoes, knocked over some trees and pulled up those root balls. And I know we've had a couple of backups that have been, pretty costly. And so that smoke testing would help identify some of those areas of sewer that have been damaged, and also some of these areas out east of town that we haven't done smoke testing on yet. We've also asked them to look at options for some permanent flow monitoring stations for the sanitary sewer. We're spending about $3.5 million a year on sanitary sewer rehab through our manhole rehab, pipe bursting, and cured in place pipe lining. But to gauge the success of those projects, we really don't have a very good way to collect data other than what we see coming in at the plant. And so, what these flow monitors will do will allow us to, we're probably looking at 10 or 12 of these monitoring stations. And so these are going to be just installations in manholes that'll show us, what that flow is doing, how it responds to rainfall. And we can compare that with the data that we collected for our master plan just to verify that we're making progress by making some of these investments in the sanitary sewer rehab. For the solids handling phase two project, I really don't have too much to report on that. We're still, there's not a whole lot to, not a whole lot coming up out of the ground right now. We're still working on underground utilities and some foundations and things like that. But that is moving along. And Fifth and Walnut intersection improvements, we started to relocate some utilities on that, and then the city decided they wanted to build a bus stop there, so we're on hold until all that design gets changed, and shouldn't affect the utilities too much, though. Are there any questions on any of these projects?
I remember that's when we had struggled to get someone to bid on it.
Right.
Right. And we finally got someone to bid on it. We kind of questioned the numbers. We still feel good about now that it's gotten put on hold for a bus stop. They're still okay.
They're fine. They're just, okay. We've got the street patched, and they're just kind of waiting on the design to get finished.
Okay.
This next slide here, I just wanted to kind of give you an example. This is West Poplar Street. And so during construction, we realized we had an opportunity here to abandon some of this old 12-inch AC line that runs up the middle of these downtown alleyways. This was installed in the 60s and 70s to provide capacity for fire protection downtown. Unfortunately, it was going to be too costly to take up the bricks and run it in the streets. So they ran it in these back alleys, in a lot of cases right on top of the sanitary sewer. And so, looking at how as we do these street projects, we've replaced water lines along Second. We've got a water line installed along Third. It allows us to move some of these meters out to the street and out of the alleyway, which can allow us to abandon some of those water lines in the alley. So, we are having a few field changes on Poplar and relocating some of those services. But at the end of the day, that's going to be a big benefit for downtown. And so this is going to be the Rogers Museum, the Hawkins House, just moving that meter out to the front and then relocating that fire line here. And they've got another facility over here on Third Street where we can relocate the meter there and abandon some of these service lines that are, just going all over the place trying to serve buildings from wherever they can. So
it also saves money. Abandoning those old lines, and is there a cost savings to that as well?
Right now the cost is going to be fairly minimal, but we're asking the contractor to install a few extra water services. I think the big deal for us is the liability of having all those old water lines in those alleyways in those tight quarters. I mean, a 12-inch water line break in those alleyways where you've got historic buildings 20 feet apart, it's really a risk that we want to try to take out of the equation downtown. So we're taking every opportunity to make these kind of decisions wherever we can. So
good job.
I gotta give my inspection staff credit for that. They came to me and said, hey, wouldn't this be a good idea? Yes, yeah, that would be a good idea. Let's look at that. So we turned that around and gave that direction to the contractor. If there are no other questions or any questions on the individual review projects, that's all I have today.
Hey, Brian, those flow monitors, this is a stupid question. Are those ours, or are those basically the I don't remember which firm you'd...
Trek. We've done them both ways. And so we've hired them on a temporary basis where they come in and put their equipment in, monitor flows for 3 or 4 months and just where we can get a good idea of how that system's responding to rainfall events, and then they pull them and just that's kind of a data verification. But I think what we're going to be looking for is trends over time, and so what we've asked them to do is give us a quote for a permanent installation. And I would expect that we would own and operate those systems. We've asked them to kind of look at the marketplace and provide some options and recommendations for us to install. And historically, I think the biggest issue with those is getting power to them. It might be something where we have to go out and change the batteries every couple of months. Because most of the times these are down in a creek, way off the street where there's not going to be electricity.
Yeah.
Any questions? Okay, that concludes engineer report.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. Okay. Pollution control.
I'll get all the lot of space in this packet. I'd like to put your mind to these. I'm not going to be all 100 plus pages in each
detail. I think it was page 84 to 164, and I was trying to figure out if I was, if we were going to have a test, I wasn't going to be able to pass. So there was a lot of stuff there.
The permit that we have runs on an actual fiscal year as opposed to our fiscal year, so we're starting off anew. So far, another month down with no big issues for the plant. It is a little tougher this time of year for us right now until we get our solids handling project complete. Our TSS, you can see, it's low compared to our permit. It's a little high compared to our typical performance. And that is just because we have so many solids at the plant. It's a little tough to keep them all maintained. They grow a little differently and don't settle as well after you get a bunch of them. Amber is still doing a good job with her fog stuff. If you have specific questions, I'll be happy to address them or check with her. She is with this happening later in the month, I have a hard time delineating where I've talked about and what is going to be covered next meeting, but she's doing some reviews and has brought up some issues where she'll probably review our policy here before long. Bring that to you but that's one of the things that she's working on. I don't think it's in this. It may be in the next one. The pre-treatment, obviously we still OMP is still going over on their stuff. They're moving along in their approval through the city for their improvements. We're working with them, they're working with us. We're not having any trouble with them from our side. The annual pre-treatment report was submitted to DEQ with Brent's signature. Significant events were still ongoing with salts handling. It causes us some surprises during the day. Every once in a while, keep life interesting. They hit, you know, various lines, whether they're electric or water or whatever utility. But we so far have been able to handle those with minimal disruptions and no damage, permanent speaking. We do have one new polymer vendor that's in the qualifying for our bidding process. So that should save us some money that I can hopefully bring before you next time to keep our prices low on that. That polymer was previously bid around the COVID timeframe and it's now run out. So prices were very elevated at that point. So should save us a couple hundred dollars a month. We did have an odor complaint filed with DEQ. From discussion with DEQ, I believe it was one or two complaints just filed a lot of times. But I couldn't find where they documented that. They did come up and do a site inspection, which I put into this report. I'll summarize it and say no non-compliance items were found. Repeated the process that Pat, my lab supervisor, while I was out for doing some bit of something, I don't remember what I was out for, but he took the odor complaint and went ahead and followed our procedure as we go to the site where the odor complaint is coming from and see if we can document the odor ourselves. I believe I've got my spreadsheet where we document a lot of different facts around the complaint. One thing that I document is where it's coming from, what direction is that from the plant, and then what direction is the wind blowing. 98% of the time they're upwind from the plant, and so it always makes me really question it. But one noteworthy item is these new complaints that have popped up are almost exactly 1 year after the previous complaints popped up. So,
well, I don't know what day it was, and I don't know if it's the same day that this complaint was filed, but there was a day, and I wish I'd have marked it down, but there was a day that there was a distinct odor, and I live, you know, out in that area. Uh-huh. But it was, I would say, growing up on a farm, litter, you know, sometimes they'll, I don't know where I went, but there was a distinct odor, but there was also, that same day, there was also a pretty heavy smoke. I think that there had maybe even been a fire or some. So there were two or three things going on. One day, I don't know if it's the same day, but it was a very distinct odor. And again, it was oftentimes, again, growing up, real, you know, you get chicken litter, and I don't know if someone treated the farm, but they do it about the same time every year. Because most of the people that smelled it said, well, they do, this is about the time of year that this happens.
Yes.
So, again, I don't know if it lines up exactly, but there was definitely a distinct odor.
And Pinnacle
several miles from the plant.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of, it was there a day, it was gone. So.
Yes. And the Pinnacle maintenance facility is just across the street from us, and they burn all their leaves, and they were burning that same week as well. So that's probably where the smoke came from. And then the other thing that you'll notice on this sheet that I document is things like barometric pressure and temperature and things like that. Because if you have a real heavy air day where there's a lot of moisture in the air and things like that, it tends to put a cap on that valley. So anything that's in there just kind of stays low.
Well, that particular day, I had been told by phone that they had smelled it, but as I came down New Hope Road coming out to the west, you could see when you kind of top the hill there above Bellevue, you could just see, I mean, you could see the smoke as you kind of got that way from the high point. It was just laying down in there, so it was probably a combination. So again, when I first saw that, I remember that specific day. Didn't know if it lined up exactly with the complaint, but it is something that happens, like on an annual basis. I'm not sure quite where they from, so.
Yeah, on that particular day though, you know, Pat went to that exact address on the day that they were complaining and couldn't smell anything. The other thing, and I didn't put it in here, but what I have found whenever I have talked with people in those neighborhoods in the past, a great deal of them are empty nesters, and they have they have large homes with a great number of bathrooms in them, built to have families in them. Kids have moved off to college on their own, whatever, what have you. This time of year, the air is really dry, their pee traps evaporate, so they get sewer gases back into their home. So a lot of times they're smelling things in their home that are not outside, they're coming up through their sewers. So that's the other thing that I have found that I'm able to help. Yeah.
So did y'all have any of that, did you remember that same day, or was I the only one that?
Just you, Jerry.
Yeah, just me. Well, it was me and a lot of my neighbors, I guess. So you might have even noticed it too.
So, flush your toilets, and then if it's a bathroom you don't use a lot, take like a cup of baby oil and put down your shower drain or any floor drains that are in there, and that's non-harmful.
Oh, it's Clorox.
And it doesn't evaporate. And it's heavier than water, so it's even more resistant to gases coming through it. So, these are the plants.
Is this the same one that you? Todd, is this the same? This complaint?
Yes, this is our complaint here, and then this is our investigation from William Cody from the ADEQ came up and took some pictures of our facility, what's happening. You can see we keep it clean, looking nice. Here's their summary sent to Brent. His name is on it. And where that was at. So, and then this is my complaint log here. And you can see Pat is the one who's logged me. He drove by the house about 30 minutes after the call and didn't detect any odors. So we're very responsive. We do everything we can to be a good neighbor. I just wanted to put this in here and you can see, you know, complaints started here and then picked up here. So that's to give you an idea of time frame. I can blow that up if you guys want to look at it. But, I guess 125 is as high as it'll go. But on to last month, I'd asked for how much detail to go into on the 303 list discussion. And so what I determined was I'll give you guys all the information in the packet, and then I'm going to give you a presentation that kind of breaks it down in a few simple slides. And if you have more detailed questions about the material that's there, I'd be happy to go through it with you. One thing is not on there. There it is. So here's kind of the process I went through to come, you know, to get to this. It's pretty self-explanatory. So your basic timeline, you know, what did happen here. The Arkansas gained EPA approval to remake through their rulemaking process about the way they're going to do their 303D list. It was approved by the EPA. They can't do it differently until the EPA tells them they can do it differently. They have to go through a public comment and all that kind of thing to change how they do their 303D list. So Arkansas doesn't have the flexibility to change how they evaluate streams without EPA approval. And so then Arkansas created their list based on that approved methodology. And then the EPA added some on review, including the Osage Creek where we discharge. The public submitted a lot of comments on it, which is what a lot of the pages are, is public comments. And then the EPA continued on with no change. So that's what happened in a nutshell. I mean, that's, you take that to your coffee table and get it. But what is the 303 list? What does it do? It shows, so Arkansas has several functions for water. They can say it's recreational, they can say it's drinking, they can say it's industrial, they can name a use for a water body. And then that use has a way to categorize it if it's still functional for that use. The 303 list is a list of water bodies which do not meet the water quality standards for the functional use of that water body. So that's what that is. And then if it's on that list, they have to come up with a plan, if you will, for how they're going to make that water body meet that standard. So that's what it means to be on the list. So what did the EPA actually say? So here's what I did. I went through and I picked three main points of contention between the EPA and Arkansas. And I just kind of followed them through. I picked a spot out of what the EPA said. I picked some public comment responses. I used Springdale because they hired an attorney and made it very readable and understandable for a layman. And then I went through and I picked the EPA's basic response to that, to those three points through this. So the whole thing you started on is the EPA is partially disapproving the 2020 list with respect to seven water body. Let's see if I can get this all the way in. There we go. Maybe if I shrink it down a little. There we go. Seven water body, and which the EPA is adding to these seven ensure are all in the Illinois River watershed, and they're saying, hey, those are not attaining the state's narrative nutrient criteria. And that's on page 7, section E, of what they actually, you know, if you want to go and look at their original statement, which I included in here, which, by the way, they take down after they go through this. They scrub the web where it's no longer available for you to look at what they actually said to start with, what these public comments are addressing. So you hold in your hot hands there a scarce document. Because the state's narrative nutrient criteria do not specify concentrations that would impair designated uses, a threshold magnitude concentration of 0.037 milligrams per liter was applied to be protective of the aquatic life designated use. This criterion magnitude is currently applicable in some Oklahoma waters that are in the same ecoregion as the Arkansas segments. EPA evaluated periphyton results from the MGY study 2, which used a passive diffusive periphytometer method to ensure the response of periphyton to nutrient enrichments at the Osage sites along Osage Creek, which coincide with some of the segments assessed in the above section. Results of that study suggest that nutrients were not limiting periphyton growth at any site. So that's what the EPA said and what the public responded to mostly. That was the three comments that the public took issue with. So the in response to one, unquestionably, any attempt by Arkansas to change the narrative standard to a threshold magnitude criteria, i.e. a numeric standard, would be considered a revision to the state's currently approved water quality standard. The fact that EPA purports to translate the narrative standard to a threshold magnitude criterion for assessment purposes does not shelter EPA's action from scrutiny, and it does not make EPA's action any less unlawful. So then the EPA's role in the 303D listing process is one of limited oversight and review. The EPA has a 30-day period to review the state's listing, indicating Congress's intention for EPA to have a limited role in the process. In its review of a state implemented standards, the EPA's power is to approve or reject. When EPA made the decision to overlist the seven water bodies pairs in Arkansas and relied on Oklahoma's water quality standard in that decision, it deviated from its limited role. And then the data from the MGY study does not support EPA's claim that total phosphorus concentrations indicate that the segment is impaired by nuisance level of algae present in the streams. Rather, the study concluded the opposite. So what the EPA, they got really wordy, and I'm not gonna, I'm gonna try not to just like read these verbatim. The biggest thing I want to point out is they stuck with their decision. That's this first paragraph. They said, no, we're still going to do what we're going to do. We're going to include these additional water bodies. And then in response to the comment that they changed Arkansas's narrative list to a number criterion, they basically said, we did not. And then went on to try to explain to you how that them applying 0.037 milligrams a liter was not actually a number. So that's the response to the you can't apply 0.037 numerical to a narrative standard. Then it goes on to say that they're not overstepping their bounds, and then it finds that just because they only have 30 days to review it, even if they go past the 30 days, they still have that authority based on some past court cases. And so they don't really worry about that. And then the EPA's consideration of the MGY study is appropriate as it constitutes a water quality data and information. So they don't really note that it says the opposite of what they say it does. So those are the responses to the public. So what's next? The DEQ is in the best position to respond currently, because that's whose action they corrected. RW has not been impacted to this action to date. However, we will have to take a look at the impact to our permit renewal, because we have a draft permit already. So the problem is DEQ has not released that permit, so the 303D list informs how they produce that permit. So there has to be some action to help improve the water quality in a 303D list stream versus managing the water quality that's already there. They say, okay, the water quality is good, So what we're doing is good. We can manage it this way. Whenever it's on the 303D list, remember they say you have to improve the water quality. Well, they don't really have any means of improving the water quality other than the people that they're giving permits to. So they can't just go to Joe Farmer or Joe Golf Course owner and say, you must improve the water quality through here, because they don't have a permit, because they don't have discharge. So there's no way they can affect those people. The only people they can affect is point dischargers that they have a permit for. They're going to run into trouble because the EPA's model shows that if you pulled all the phosphorus out from all the point dischargers, it doesn't improve the water quality. So I'm not sure how they're going to do that, but we're going to have to take a look at what they do now, because we have a draft permit that we've already been given. And so we'll be able to clearly show that this has impacted us if we need to, if it changes, if that permit changes. It would be our leadership up to what's the best course of action if we want to try to pursue any kind of issues if that changes. We'd have to figure out if it's worth it for us to fight it if ADEQ does not. That's the gist of what's happened here, and the major issues on the listing. And then pretty much everything else I've got in here is just the stuff that I pulled quotes from, the whole. So there's a great deal of their original opinion and things like that in here. So
it's worth knowing how long this is going on.
Yes, so you'll notice that's the 2020 list. Arkansas has to submit that in 2020, and EPA is supposed to review that in 30 days and put it out. And here we are, 2025. And so we've actually issued one other listing since then, plus they've got another one in the chamber ready to go for 2026. So I'm not sure whether they come back in and add that into the 2024 and 2026, or if they go back to their narrative on 2026 and say, well, all these seven segments that you had us list still pass today based on our criteria, because our criteria hasn't been changed. I'm not sure on that regard.
So what permit do we operate under? Existing permit that we just operate under until we're told we got a draft permit.
Okay. Yes.
How it affects us is phosphorus.
Phosphorus.
The ones we have to take out. So we're looking at building a new plant. We have to. What do we design that to? And the cost difference was $7 million. It's probably a lot more than that now.
Yeah. Back a while back, the difference was about $7 million. That was 4 years ago.
To get to EPA standard, or to
Get to point one. If I remember right, consistently. As opposed to we could deal with a 0.5 with our current setup pretty consistently. You want to be able to easily maintain about half of what your permit is. So if your permit's 0.5, you want to be able to consistently hit 0.25. To give yourself room for an error, equipment failure, those kind of things. So if they give us a 0.1 permit, we need to be able to hit 0.05. Okay.
So, is there anything that we need to do other than just be aware?
We've got, just, as I said, page 64 to 184. That was easy reading, a lot of reading. What am I supposed to know about this?
It's mostly if you had a question on where I was pulling that from, am I giving you the full picture? It's there. Okay. That was kind of the question I was asking previously is, how much of this do you really want me to go through versus how much of it's actually available? And really, there's even more that's available. as far as, like, I could have brought in the rigs and things like that, but it gets worse. But
maybe next time.
From a dryness standpoint, it gets much worse. But mostly, I didn't want to just come up here and go, well, they said this, people commented on it, and EPA basically said, nah, we really didn't say that. I wanted you to have the document in front of you. This is what they said, this is what we commented, and this is how they responded. But I feel like if I just come up here and said that, you'd look at me like I had three heads and I was crazy. The EPA wouldn't do something like that. They did. So I don't know where it'll go from here.
But no action we need to
do. No action is needed.
Thank you for that.
It has a heavy impact on our upcoming permit. I just wanted you guys to be aware of it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Okay. We are going to move from reports. We have no old business, so we are now going to move into new business. The first item on new business is Resolution 25-03. A resolution waiving requirements of competitive bidding for the purchase of property insurance and other services.
Yes, sir. Our property insurance is issued by Cincinnati Insurance through Rogers Insurance Agency. We did take this out to bid last year, and we found out that some of our peers, while they may go through a different agent, are underwritten by Cincinnati. And we did exchange some emails with another company after some back and forth and us providing them with some additional information. They didn't submit a bid themselves. So last year we just had the one bid from Rogers Insurance, underwritten by Cincinnati Insurance Company. It was the first of a new 3-year rate lock. So the only thing that would change, I anticipate, our price would be any changes to our list of insured property or any estimated values, any updates to those that we make this year. So staff's asking for the waiver of competitive bidding. Given those circumstances, we would anticipate coming back in the next month or two with a proposal from Rogers Insurance.
Yes, for clarity, so we have the current policy expires in 2025. So basically, and then the 3-year lock, are we in the 3-year lock period or will it lock?
Last year was the first year of it. Okay. So if we renew, it'll be year two.
Okay. It's not a continuous rolling three, it's just a straight 3-year lock.
Correct.
Okay, we have Resolution 25-03 in front of us. Any questions or comments? If not, I would entertain a motion.
I make a motion to approve Resolution number 25-03, a resolution waiving the requirements of competitive bidding for purchase of property insurance and for other purposes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries to approve Resolution 25-03. Thank you.
Has anybody other than Rogers Insurance ever? We've never had one, I don't think. I think it's always been the...
Nope.
Since the 70s or something.
Yeah, when we went through that process last year, as Jared said, and at least one said, well, that's really cheap.
Right, they couldn't compete with the rate. And so really just the question would be, we want to work with a different agent than we had good experience working with Rogers Insurance, and we were reaching for the next.
It's all right, but that's the way.
Yeah.
Okay, the next item, the item number two, the resolution 25-04, a resolution amending the employee policy manual to the Rogers Corporation and other purposes.
Thanks. Good afternoon. We've got some recommended changes for the policy manual we'd like to walk through with you, seeking approval from the commission on this. Starting in section 6 of the policy manual, which is the hiring section. Basically, wanting to change the language, we've worked with Robert on this, that would allow background checks on existing employees. Currently, we do a background check on a new hire, along with a drug screen. And then our drivers, who have CDL licenses, we do annual background checks. That's required by Department of Transportation. but we don't have any language that allows us to do a background check if another situation came up with an employee. It said, you know, I've got a legal situation you need to be aware of. I've had a violation, it may affect my driver's license. We don't have anything that says, hey, we need to see what's going on there for the sake of the utility just to protect us. So this language would allow us, if needed, to pursue a background check. We currently have in place on our holidays some pretty good language that addresses how holiday pay is paid out. Specifically, it addresses the fact that the employee has to work the business day before and the business day after. If they choose at the last minute to use vacation time, we've got some items in place how that would be handled so they could get their holiday pay. If they call in sick the day before or the day after, typically they would need to provide a doctor's note. However, we've added a short piece of language here that says applies if the employee misses more than half the shift. So if the employee came in, made an effort to work, worked at least half their shift, and then said, I can't go anymore, I've got to go home, I'm sick, we would not require a doctor's note at that point. Some of our software improvements have also been for our time and attendance and our timesheets. And our policy manual in the past was reflective of the old software. How was vacation accrued? When did it start for a new employee? This would update that language to reflect that new software. Just explaining, for a new employee, you'll begin accruing based on this criteria. For all employees, you would see it and it would be available to you based on this date or this time of the month. And would also explain that when that takes place and where they're found, which is in the benefit summary. So providing just some clarification and just removing the old language which applied to the old software. The same holds true on the sick leave. It just explains for our new employees when their sick leave accruals would start, and for all employees when they would see that based on a time frame each month. And then this last portion addresses sick leave donations. And currently our policy on sick leave donations states that an employee could donate sick leave only to their spouse if their spouse worked here. And we're proposing to change that. And the language there states, if it was approved, the employee may request to donate accumulated sick leave to another employee who has exhausted their available sick leave balance. The donating employee may choose the amount to donate, provided their remaining sick leave balance does not fall below 80 hours. Employee receiving donations cannot exceed 480 donated hours in a 12-month period. All donations require approval by a management team appointed by the superintendent. The management team has the discretion to request supporting documentation to verify the need. Typically, approval of a donation would be based on hardship or emergency situations. The donated hours would be paid according to the pay rate of the receiving employee. The superintendent retains final authority over the administration of the approval process. It's rare we see situations come up, but we know when they do, our staff has asked, is there a way we could donate? And we feel this would be a good solution. There's good oversight. It's not just a random thing. It would require approval from that team appointed by the superintendent, but it would allow employees to help out someone if they had a hardship situation. Utility is not supplementing that in any way. If there was no one that wanted to donate, it wouldn't go anywhere. So we're submitting these changes to the commission, asking for your permission, your approval.
And it comes to staff recommendation.
Sir?
Staff recommendation along with these.
Okay. I make a motion to approve resolution number 2504.
Second.
Motion Travis, second by Kathy. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? When does that come effective? You, unless you said the language republishes, so it comes effective
today.
And you just basically republish, everybody knows.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, the next item is Resolution 25-05, a resolution amending the policy on deposits and investments for the water, Rogers Water Utilities and for other purposes, Jared.
Well, we just had a meeting with the Depository and Investment Committee where we reviewed these proposed updates with that committee and had a unanimous recommendation to the commission to amend the policy, but we want to, in this meeting, go ahead and let you understand what we're proposing here. There's a resolution. There's an exhibit to the resolution. This exhibit to Resolution 2505, this version has a markup showing proposed amendments in red. I'm basically going to skip through this at Exhibit 1, though, and scroll all the way down to Exhibit A, which follows it, because it's here where we will see the gist of the proposal. For quite a while, we've had this calculation of required minimum reserves. We are proposing a big picture, a reduction of those required minimum reserves. And it's going to be a change in the formula that is used to reduce it for both water and sewer. So this is similar to the exhibits you would normally see each year where we would give last year's number and then this year's number based on updated information. But here the calculation's a little bit different. So in that 2024 column there on the right, you can see the old formula. It's last year's operating expenses, including depreciation, which is a non-cash expense, plus next year's debt service, and that gives us the required minimum reserves. If you then back out prior year depreciation, then you get minimum short-term reserves, which is basically just our benchmark for what we need to have invested in investment vehicles of 1 year or less. Beyond that, they can be invested in vehicles of longer terms. This calculation has worked well for us for many years. It's a conservative approach that has put us in, or helped put us in, a strong financial position. And our proposal today in no way means to undermine that strong financial position, but we're really trying to make an effort to right size our calculation of the required minimum reserves here. And what's driving this is our rate study for water and sewer. As we have been going through that rate study and as we've been refining our capital project schedule, we see there's some significant capital projects that we'll have to issue a lot of new debt for, and that is driving what will be rate increases for water and for sewer. Given those increases that are due to our capital needs, we don't want to layer on additional rate increases that would be required just to fund our cash reserves. And the most significant piece of the old formula here that we're watching is the debt service component. You can see that right now for the calculation for 2024, it was about $1.7 million in the water formula and just under $1.5 million for the sewer formula. We know that over the next 5 years, if we stick to plan, we're going to be, our principal and interest payment for sewer is going to be over $10 million. So you just think about an extra $10 million that's got to sit aside in cash, just hanging out there to be used on a rainy day if needed, right? This is in addition to the current principal and interest payment that we would be making in a given year. So we'd have to have the $10 million to pay that and then the $10 million to sit in cash reserve somewhere, right? And so to be able to fund that required minimum reserves would require us to raise rates. And so we're trying to strike this balance between having a buffer, having enough of a buffer to give us some level of comfort, but also not putting an unnecessary burden on our ratepayers. So just in terms of the dollars here, if you look at the 2024 minimum reserves for water, it was $14,459,000. We're talking about going now to $10,704,000, unrestricted minimum reserves. And for sewer, it was $14,856,000. Last year, we're talking about reducing that to $9,049,000. The other thing that we're doing here is we're making a distinction between unrestricted minimum reserves and restricted minimum reserves. We have these different classes of restricted assets, and the only one that we're proposing have a restricted minimum reserve relates to our meter deposits liability. And to help explain this, I think, a little bit better, let me scroll down to the next page here and look at water in particular. So this is a schedule of our restricted, it's kind of a simplified schedule of our restricted and unrestricted assets. And so you see here for water, unrestricted, this first sort of table at the top is minimum short-term reserve. So you see that $10,704,000 figure. So what we're saying here is that minimum short-term reserves would be equal to that new unrestricted minimum reserve plus all our restricted assets, totaling up to $14,573,883, right? The other money that we have in cash reserves right now is in this sort of middle table right here, undesignated other short-term reserves. These are all in CDs, $14 million worth, right? We could invest these in longer-term investment vehicles if we chose to. They're just all in one-year CDs right now. Totals up to $24,954,000 plus our restricted assets, total of $28.8 million. And we compare that then, if these are our total water reserves, we compare that to what's our required minimum reserves. Well, we've got that $10,704,000 for unrestricted, and we've got our meter deposits liability. The idea here is that we collect these deposits from our customers when they create a new account, and one day we'll have to give that money back, right? Well, if you look at what we actually have in cash, it's, what, $1.48 million. So we've got interest that we earn on these deposits in the bank, and we won't have to pay that interest back. But we do have this liability to eventually one day pay back the deposits that we've collected. So we're saying that liability is our required minimum reserve for restricted meter deposits. Anything above and beyond that is reserves above minimum, right? So we see what that reserves above minimum is for unrestricted assets, and then we see what it is for all of these different restricted assets classes. Those other restricted classes that you see are debt service, principal and interest, our access and impact fees, our depreciation. There's nothing that says we've got to have a minimum on any of those things, and therefore we're not proposing a minimum. We're keeping it simple by keeping basically the majority of this as unrestricted reserves, giving us the flexibility to spend those funds as needed if and when we need to. So this is how it would be presented going forward with this breakout showing the restricted reserve for unrestricted, excuse me, the required reserve for unrestricted and required reserve for any restricted funds. For water, that would be meter deposits only. For sewer, we're only talking about a minimum reserve requirement for unrestricted assets. So our minimum short-term reserves for sewer would be equal to this proposed $9,049,000 plus all our restricted assets to get to $12,427,254. And then down here at the bottom, you can see how our total reserves compare to the required minimum reserve. And this would be our presentation of those required reserves going forward. The other thing that I did want to note in this meeting was that, and this isn't really clear in the exhibit one, so I wanted to put it here on the page, talking specifically about minimum reserves. Is this text right here in the middle that says unrestricted cash reserves are intended to be available for use when needed. Use of reserves may cause reserves to drop below the required minimums. That's why they're there, right? You have reserves so that if you need to use them at some point, you can use them. But such drops should be, in three conditions here, temporary with the consent of the commission and accompanied by a plan to bring reserves back up to the required minimums. So we feel like this brings some clarity. We're not just looking at sort of a generic required minimum reserve that includes not only restricted assets but unrestricted assets. It breaks those apart so that we have separate benchmarks for each. It's a lower number, as I indicated, but we try to do our due diligence in terms of assessing our risks and assessing what we would need and in the most likely worst case scenarios, if that makes sense, right? I mean, we did some analyses to consider, well, what if we lost our biggest industrial user? Or what if it was just a really wet year and there was no irrigation use? What would that do to our revenues? In both of those instances, you know, $10.7 million in water, $9 million in sewer, that was more than enough to at least buy us some time to recover or to come up with a new plan or something like that. So, as I mentioned, it has the recommendation of the committee. It is staff's proposal to amend the investment policy to include these new formulas. And one more thing that I'll mention, that I mentioned to the committee, is that we also are monitoring our debt service coverage ratio, and that's a key component of what we're looking at as we put together our rate study. You know, I think for bond covenant purposes, I want to say the requirements, it varies a little bit, but it's about 1.15. We're talking about net income over your annual principal and interest. There's this ratio. And we've got a really solid debt service coverage ratio now. I think it's between 4 and 5 for water, and it's about 7 for sewer. And our rates, as we go through these rate study proposals, they largely stay above 2.0. So even as we plan ahead, we're planning for our revenues to be strong enough, our current year revenues, that's what we're talking about, current year revenues to be strong enough that even with those revenues, we have buffer in terms of what we're collecting in a given year. So these cash reserves are not the only buffer, but we also have buffer in terms of what we're bringing in each year to cover our expenses.
And that number, that ratio determines that 1.2 is what our underwriter or some underwriters have told us that's the max, or that's the minimum, excuse me, to get our best rate.
Well, I think as Jared pointed out, the Deposit Investment Committee reviewed this, and Travis, I think it comes to us as with a due pass recommendation.
Yes.
Okay. And with that, so it has been reviewed. At this time, I would take entertain a motion to approve Resolution 25-05 along with Exhibit 1.
Motion to approve Resolution 25-05, resolution amending the policy on deposits and investments for the Rogers Water Utilities and for other purposes.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to approve Resolution 25-05. The next item is item number 4. It's approval of banking and depository institutions. Share that list. Also in the packet that is also reviewed by the committee as well.
This is another requirement of our investment policy for the committee to designate this list of depositories subject to approval by the commission. Staff is recommending no changes to the list. This is who we send out our invitations for bid when we are We've got some money to invest and want to get a good rate on our next round of CEDARs. These are the folks who received those. For the record, this list includes Arvest Bank, Bank OZK, BOK Financial, Cadence Bank, Centennial Bank, Chambers Bank, First National Bank, First Western Bank, Regions Bank, and Simmons Bank. The investment policy also requires us to conduct an annual review of the financial condition of these depositories. And in satisfaction of that requirement, staff have confirmed that each of them remains eligible to receive public funding as determined by the Arkansas State Bank Department on their website. So it is staff's request that the commission go ahead and approve this list of depositories for RWU for the next year.
And this list also comes to the commission with the recommendation.
Yes.
From the committee. Okay, with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to pass resolution number 25-06, a resolution amending the... It's just the approval of the banking and depository institutions. Sorry.
You got that motion?
Second.
That motion second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries to approve the designation and approval of the depository institution. Okay, the next item we have would be resolution 25-06, resolution amending the fiscal year 2025 budget to add an additional field employee in the sewer department and for other purposes. Johnny, welcome.
So back in January, I think, or sooner, I can't remember, I went to data. I knew we had quite a few gaps in between employee hirings and everything. So basically what we're doing here is we're asking to add an employee with adding no cost to our budget or anything else. We're just adding an employee to our number of employees. Because Dana calculated out how many weeks we were without certain employees and got it down to, we were approximately 20 weeks here that we could have an employee and not get over budget. In our budget item, it would just be, like I said, be adding an employee there. So that's what we're coming to you to ask for, is your approval to add an employee to our new button.
Staff recommendation to approve resolution 25-06. And with that, I would entertain a motion.
I make a motion to approve resolution number 25-06.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. John Peckin, Jeff Cruz, 25-06. The last item I have here is designating a water and sewer commissioner to serve on the depository investment committee for a 2-year term. I know, Travis, you have served. Would you be willing to continue to serve in that role?
If need be. Also, anybody else is welcome to it, especially since Janae's not here. That's usually how that.
She would be qualified, but you don't get qualified. So
oh, yeah, absolutely.
The continuity is always good. I need to entertain a motion to.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think if the commission could elect a degree.
I entertain a motion to approve Mr. Green. To
second.
I'll third it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's yours.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Travis, thank you. You will
appreciate your vote of confidence here.
No doubt. Okay. With that, we've covered everything. I apologize. I know we're at 5:24, but we had a lot of good information. And I think that those reserves, as we look at that rate study, I think it's going to be important. May not seem as important right now, but I think as we look at down the road, that'll all maybe become more clear as we move into the rate study. So thank you all for your due diligence in that. And with that, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
And thank you all for the rescheduling of the meeting, Jen.